Winning at Life. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. This is live financial news talk radio. It is a live show and we talk about money. You might have some concerns, not sure what to do. Oh no, we're going to talk about some Social Security benefits tonight. We had a number of calls on yesterday's show regarding that. It's kind of a normal topic.
Before we get into the news of the day, a quick list from MarketWatch. Sam Manesian came up with a list of things you need to run over if you're over 50 and you're going to change careers. This is happening more and more often as the gig economy is working its way up the generational hierarchy. But there's a lot to be said for people who test their new career first. You know, if you're thinking about changing careers, especially with the gig economy making its dominance felt lately, you can actually test your career.
Define the gig economy.
Okay. So that's, I'm glad you asked. So we're talking about changing careers. A lot of times this is going to be a phased retirement or leaving something that you don't really like to do, but you make a lot of money for something that you want to do, even though you make less money. So if you're thinking about being a photographer, keep your job during the week and go do a couple of weddings over the weekend and see how it works out. Do a couple of portrait sessions or go to the park and do some engagement photos or, you know, do a couple of events first. Test it out. Dip your toe in the water because you may find that you don't like the job as much as you think you like, or the columnist here points out that, you know, you may be trying to get some wedding portrait gigs and there's just not enough work to go around for the photographers. But number two, he talks about not managing your expectations. People have this not realistic idea of switching careers and money's not important. The important thing is I'm going to do what I love. And if you love what you do, you never work a day. And then they're not really able to adjust their lifestyle down. Taking a $20,000, $30,000 a year cut in their salary actually makes them more miserable than they were going to that job that they didn't think was the best job in the world. Have you seen that, Gregory? Taking that pay cut and you're like, maybe I shouldn't have chased my passion.
I hadn't had anybody that, if they're chasing their passion and find out they don't like it or unhappy, then maybe that is the case. But I just don't see that when they're making that change. It is because they have options and, you know, it's not always fun to make the big bucks or whatever their core job was and chase their passion may be more fun.
Well,
even if it's to make less.
I'm going to skip two items on his list and go straight to the last one. The way he wrote it here in MarketWatch is not having a plan B. But what he's really talking about when you read through his explanation and some of the little stats here he throws out is that you need to have your exit worked out. What if your new passion, your new career change doesn't work out? How are you going to get out of it? You know, if you bought a shrimping boat like Forrest Gump and you're going to go down and start catching shrimp as your new career and you're not catching any shrimp, what are you going to do with that boat? What are you going to do if you sold your house? What are you going to do? You know, what is your exit plan before you even get in? Know how you're going to get out and know what that looks like. That's something you talk about even when you're going to get into an investment. That's the same thing you say about an annuity is before you get into anything, know how you're going to get out.
Yeah. What are your exits? That should always be a concern. What?
That's okay.
You're looking for more?
Well, I don't know. I figured maybe you have seen someone in this situation. Someone goes and he tries to start a new career, maybe like a phased retirement or a second career, and then he can't get out of it. You have stories about saying, be careful what you start because you can't always stop it.
Yeah, there was one recently we're talking about separated from the company, but now he's like, do I retire or do I buy this business? And I shifted into a mode, if you buy this business, what is your exit from it?
Troy in Metairie, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Troy?
Hi, James and Gregory. I love your show.
Hey, thanks.
Just a comment on the last bit about Aramco and the CEO's salary. I think there's a couple of things that would make them more profitable. And the first one is the resource base they have. So they're sitting on billions of barrels, right? And these are all gigantic fields that they've known about for a long time, but are highly productive. And the second one is the location of the resource base, which is all on land. So if you're competing with a Gulf of Mexico type of development, Developments in the Gulf of Mexico cost, you know, $5 to $60 a barrel to produce, but in Saudi Arabia, it's only $3 a barrel to produce these oil. So maybe the fact they don't get paid as much as the Exxon CEOs or the Shell CEOs is because they don't need a star out there to go and get the oil.
Those are great points. I think you're absolutely right, Troy. Yeah, I'm glad you added that in there. And how fortunate are they just for the winning the geographic lottery there? But would you have a question we can help you with tonight?
Nope, that's it. Just wanted to comment on that.
Oh, well, that was good stuff enough. Thanks, Troy. Appreciate it. Yeah, you know, that's one of the amazing things. It's like America. How lucky are we that we just have this beautiful, perfect spread of farmland that is basically, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, the top of Oklahoma. Then you got Missouri and Iowa. Most countries do not have just a beautiful, flat spread of pasture like that. France doesn't have that much farmland. Switzerland doesn't have hardly any. It's all mountains. Greece doesn't have a whole lot of farmland. You know what I'm talking about? Like, one of the main complaints of England is how rocky it is and how bad the soil is for farming. And then you go over like Norway and it's even worse. And, you know, that's one of the geographic luck of the draws we have. We also have a ton of oil under us. But yeah, Saudi Arabia, not only do they have the oil, but you can basically get to it with one of those little plastic pail and buckets you can get at the dollar store. It's so shallow and it's so sweet, it's so cheap. But then again, they're in a desert. They don't even have a whole lot of trees. Other than oil, what do they have? Sand? It's a tough trade-off.
And Troy had a great point. I believe they found oil back in 73 over there. Their cost per barrel is about $9 a barrel. That's probably the lowest producing cost of any major player in oil production. Comparison, for example, the highest is in the UK, and they're at about $44 a barrel. Think about it, when oil was below 40 a barrel.
Yeah, they're basically,
they were like, we have to stop. They're kind of like Uber of oil. We're losing every barrel we produce. We're losing money. That is crazy.
Because they have the toughest oil to get to. You got to go make platforms out in the North Sea for most of their oil.
Yeah, and that's a great point. It's all out there in the desert over there.
Tim, in Metairie, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Tim?
What do y'all think's going to happen to Uber tomorrow?
Why tomorrow?
Tomorrow is the day the shares unlock. The restricted legend comes off.
Oh, that's
all
right.
All the employees and insiders that got shares for free.
Uh-huh. Well, not some
tomorrow
of them got it for compensation,
is bloodbath
right?
Day.
That's right.
Is that part of what happened to Grubhub the other day?
It is. You're absolutely right to bring that up, Tim. They were talking about that on Fox Business. So it's like a few tens of millions of Uber shares. Oh, I'm just filling other people in, Tim. About tens of millions of Uber shares are available.
Timing,
and now billions are going to be available starting tomorrow, right?
Yeah, so tomorrow morning. But the deal is, you know, it's basically Christmas time, so why the hell would you do something and lift the restrictions? They didn't think about this when they issued the stock, but why lift the restrictions right before Christmas? Because you know all the people who are involved are just going to want to go get their Christmas and pay for Christmas, and I think it's going to be a royal bloodbath tomorrow.
Well, these are, for the most part, these are wealthy people now that invest
not
in
on
this
the inside,
company on
not
the front right. end.
No, there's some people who, when you got in a few years ago, part of your compensation was a stock package.
I see.
But it's not like they chose now to unlock the stocks. The decision on when they were going to be unlocked had to be made before they were issued. You know, if you're going to make the deal, yeah, you're going to get this stock, but it's going to unlock in 2019. Yeah. They don't have a choice though, because no one would take compensation. Here's this stock. Well, when can I sell it? Never. No one would take that deal. So you have to have a light at the end of the tunnel to get them in. But that is a good point.
They must have felt like they were going to make a whole bunch of money, and it was never, they wouldn't have the losses from the IPO. And then they just must have been really, really confident it was going to go the other way and they wouldn't have this problem. Or whoever sold them the initial valuation of the company is just off the chart. They just have no clue what they were talking about. And they've lost $7 billion. They're lost.
And this is really, it's writing a new chapter in the textbooks, because these whole unicorn companies where they have an IPO and they've never made a dime and people are still falling all over themselves to throw the money at them. This is a pattern that keeps repeating itself, and it seems to be the new paradigm in Wall Street.
Yeah. So think about the people who had the shares, and they look today, it closed at 2802, I think. And so they got to think in the morning, do I get whatever I can, you know, tomorrow, or do I wait it out and see if it turns around and that 2802 can be $18 in 4 or 5 months?
Well, see, Gregory, that's what we talked about in the last segment. Before you get into a stock, you got to know where your exits are. Are you going to get out before they unlock? If you're planning on holding this for 5 years, tomorrow means nothing, because whatever convulsions will happen should work themselves out by the time you plan on getting out. I mean, am I off my rocker here, Gregory?
Look at poor Hornbeck on Covington. All the people had bought above $50 and I think 50 cents today.
Gregory has a suspicious smirk.
It just could be the start of selling. You might not have a lot of selling initially, but I think it could be affected. But this could be a trend that continues for a while, that continues to drive down the stock there. You're going to have some hold and then say, you know what, I just need to cash and move on. You had that same effect on Twitter as well, you know, when
Gregory,
it's unlocked.
Where did you come from? Because I'm trying to place the accent.
I'm sorry?
Where were you raised? Because I've always tried to place your accent when I listen to you on the radio.
Oh, I grew up in Hattiesburg.
Okay, that'll do it. I listen to the way you say just a couple of words, like mail and stuff. And I said he's. I always figured out where you were from. So, yeah. All right, well, y'all have a good evening. Take care.
Should have messed with him, like Rhode Island or something.
Yes. From North Vietnam.
I've done that a couple of times. I'm like, where are you from? And I'll name some place up north. And they'll look. No. I said, no, I'm not. Just right up the road, Hattiesburg.
Yeah, a couple hours that way.
Yeah. It's interesting. But one reason, you know, the core is they want to have orderly trading. They want to have the lockups, because all of a sudden, you know, it's like people be cashing. It's like, no, we need more people buying than selling to drive the price up. So that's a core thing right there, that keep this stuff in line. Facebook kind of faced the same thing as well. On its IPO day, Facebook slipped 4%. 5 months later, the stock was limping along at 54% below its IPO price. And then you had the first lockup period ended October 31st of 2012. All told, about 230 million shares were unlocked. The stock fell 4% that day.
Well, that's exactly what Tony was asking about. That's not too bad of a bellwether, you know, like a watermark for what you can expect for Uber.
And then of course, Facebook, you know, still had a little bit of problems, but it turned around and was much higher 12 months later. Every stock's different. You can't necessarily predict. And this will be interesting to see. But, you know, I'm not a fan of buying into IPOs, because you don't know where they're headed. And so many of these today don't even make money prior to being issued. And a lot of them are being issued to create value, but also to be able to go borrow more money. Is one of the reasons getting access to money is doing so. So, you know, I wouldn't even be, you know, wouldn't want to be a investor on the front end or buying when it becomes available. Like we still don't know if any of these companies are going to survive or any portion. And like Uber, they just keep coming up with more ways to lose money. You know, the food service, they've got a helicopter service they're rolling out. You want to fly in some of their aircraft? Nah,
it was
not
like
me.
A boat. When was that? When was that stock release for Facebook? You said that was in 2012. Because whatever the day was, if you go back and you go to the numbers page on Winning at Life, and you click through Facebook and you open up that chart and you do the max time length, you can't tell. You can't tell. There was no long-term lasting effect, negative effect to that stock when the stocks were released.
Survivor benefits. So you can kind of look at Social Security as an excellent life insurance policy. If the worker spouse dies, The surviving spouse may receive a survivor benefit based on the working spouse's record. If the worker dies after claiming, and if he had claimed at FRA or later, and if the widow is FRA or older, FRA's full retirement age, the widow may receive the amount of his benefit at his death as her survivor benefit. Her own benefit, assuming it is lower than the survivor benefit, would cease. It would stop. Important to know that. Sometimes the question comes up, well, do we get both? No, you're going to get the larger benefit. Here's another important part. The couple must have been married at least 9 months. 9 months. There's an exception if death is by accident. Yeah, same rules apply. Same rules used for marriage, validity for spousal benefits are used for survivor benefits. If the death is by natural causes, the marriage requirement is 9 months. If by accident, the 9 month requirement is waived.
I guess that's some sort of anti-fraud provision. Some guy's on his deathbed and, hey, might as well get married so you can get some benefits off of me or something.
Only you would look at it that way.
All right, well, then we should just forget my commentary. Next rule.
I hadn't thought about it. It's just, you know, stuff happens to everybody except James Parker.
Right. Thank you.
The survivor benefit will equal the deceased spouse's benefit at the time of his death if the widow claims it at her full retirement age or later. It could be the opposite way. He could receive hers. You know, I'm not being biased here, but in the typical situation where both spouses are over full retirement age and are both receiving Social Security benefits, when one spouse dies, the surviving spouse will step up into the deceased spouse's benefit after his death if it is higher. And this is super important to know. If the higher earning spouse delays his benefit to age 70, and if his benefit includes maximum delayed credits, that's the benefit his widow will receive after his death.
There you go.
They're going to receive the larger check. And you defer based upon FRA and build up a larger check, then die, you're leaving behind that check.
One of the reasons you say, if you love your spouse.
Mm-hmm. Many high-earning husbands do not realize this when they are making their decision to claim early. They don't realize that claiming decision also affects their spouse's benefit after they die. The widower may claim the survivor benefit as early as age 60, but the benefit's going to be reduced. If they're disabled, they could receive it as early as age 50. What happens when a spouse dies early before the widow has turned full retirement age? In that case, the widow may claim her survivor benefit as early age 60, but the benefit will be reduced. When the deceased spouse dies, the original survivor benefit is set. If he dies before claiming the original benefit amount of this is his primary insurance amount. If he dies after claiming, it is the amount he is receiving at the time of his death, but not less than 82.5 of his primary insurance amount if he's receiving a reduced benefit, meaning the FRA is the primary insurance amount.
So that might be the first time I've heard that rule.
There is, you know, the thing of always covering this and talking about it is there is so much to this. It is very complex. If the widow claims a survivor benefit as early as age 60, she will receive just 71.5% of the original benefit. If she claims it at FRA or later, she'll get 100%. So there may be a time gap between when the deceased spouse dies and when the widow claims the survivor benefit, especially if she wants to hold out for the higher benefit. And another important rule here, remarriage before age 60 nullifies the survivor benefit. However, if the remarriage ends, she may become eligible for the survivor benefit. If she remarries again after age 60, she may retain eligibility for the survivor benefit. If she is receiving a survivor benefit at the time of remarriage, she has choices. She may keep receiving the survivor benefit or switch to a spousal benefit based on her new husband's record. So imagine in your 60s dating.
Not that crazy these days.
Well, let's say, especially over age 62 dating. Like, are you drawing Social Security? You know, this.
So when you pick up lines,
you know, young people today are talking about, let's see, do you have any college debt?
Yes. What do your student loans look like?
And then if you're over 62 dating, it's like, have you started Social Security yet?
Yeah. What's your record look like?
What's your FRA? Okay. Let's talk about some information you pulled out of the hat today.
We're constantly asked if Social Security is going away. And the common reply is, look, even if it is on a downward trajectory, they're going to do something to fix it. Well, finally, someone put some pen to paper, and let's give credit for Representative John Larson, a Democrat from Connecticut. He's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and he is going into very perilous political waters by proposing changes to Social Security. But he has put forward what is being called the Social Security 2100 Act, and the attempt here is to try and shore up the social program so it'll last at least till the end of the century, because right now the CBO has a trust fund hitting zero in 2036. So let's look at the 2100 Act. First, on the benefit side, let's look at the four enhancements. It uses the consumer price index for the cost of living increases, the consumer price index for the elderly, CPI-E, because right now it's using a chain CPI. To adjust benefits for inflation. So cost of living is going to be a little more generous to translate that into layman's terms. It raises the first factor in the benefit formula from 90 to 93%, which would slightly raise replacement rates for all. It increases the thresholds for taxation of benefits under the personal income tax, which would allow middle-class workers to keep more of their benefits. That's pretty cool. And then increases the special minimum benefit for those with very low earnings. So slightly more generous, but nothing too huge. To pay for it, they want to raise the payroll tax, is right now at 12.4% to 14.8% by 2043, and adjust the payroll tax on earnings above $400,000. So they're going to lift the taxation cap on Social Security. At first glance, you just got a few seconds here. What do you think of that?
I thought they would raise it 2%. They're going to raise it a little bit more. And they're doing it over a longer period of time. I probably would have proposed the bill to get to it a little quicker.
Hard to see this passing in an election year, but we'll keep an eye on it for you.
Hey, if you'd like to talk about this, among other things financially, to help see where you're on the path, give my office a call, 504-832-9200.
I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual's situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.